Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Since 1966, George Takei has been known the world over for his role as Hikaru Sulu, helmsman of the NCC-1701, better known as the Enterprise on Star Trek. But just little more than 20 years before Takei's television fame, he and his family, simply by virtue of their ancestry, had been viewed as enemies of the United States. George Takei was one of the more than 127,000 Japanese Americans imprisoned in internment camps during World War II. In 2012, Takei put his story on stage. The musical Allegiance is based on his family's experiences in the internment camps, and Allegiance is making its New England premiere at Boston's Speakeasy Stage Company, and George Takei joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much.
It's such a pleasure to have you. First of all, let me just start by hearing more about your experiences in the camps. You were 5 years old?
I was 5 years old when I just turned five, just a few weeks after my fifth birthday, when soldiers came marching up our driveway, stomped up the front porch with their fists, began pounding on the front door. And my brother and I happened to be in the living room, and we were terrified. My father, who was packing back in the bedroom, came out, answered the door, and literally at gunpoint, we were ordered out of our home. My father gave my brother and me little pieces of luggage to carry, and we followed him out onto the driveway and waited for our mother to come out. And when she finally emerged, she had our baby sister in one arm and a huge duffel bag in the other, and tears were streaming down her cheeks. That was a long time ago for me, but I will never be able to forget that terrifying morning.
And you eventually, not immediately, but eventually were sent to one of the internment camps in Arkansas.
That's right.
Okay.
We were taken from our home to the horse stables of Santa Anita Racetrack. And from a two-bedroom home on Garnet Street, we were assigned one horse stall, still pungent with the smell of horse manure. And that was to be our home for about 3 months while the camps were being built. And then when the construction was completed, we were put on trains with armed guards at both ends of each car, and taken two-thirds of the way across the country to the swamps of southeastern Arkansas.
And this is the, I hope I'm saying it correctly, the Rower
War? Rower.
Rower War Relocation Center. Wonderful
Orwellian
name there. So you were five. What was life in the camp like?
Well, on the way there, I remember asking my father, where are we going? And it took him a while. He had to think a little bit, but he said, we're going on a long vacation to a place called Arkansas. Arkansas. That sounded exotic to me. We were going on a vacation to Arkansas. It could have been Hawaii. It had the same exotic sound. And for me, actually, it was a fun experience. Catching pollywogs in the clear water of the bayou there, and watching them spring legs and turn into frogs, catching butterflies, and we heard that particularly at twilight, strange sounds coming from beyond the barbed wire fence. It was a forest, but I called it the jungle. And, there were the cawing sounds and the hooting sounds and chirping sounds. And I told my brother, there were dinosaurs out there in the jungle. And the barbed wire fence was to keep the dinosaurs out.
So that's the innocence of childhood in the midst of imprisonment for nothing more than ancestry.
Children are amazingly adaptable. What would have been grotesquely abnormal became normality in our lives. It became routine for me to line up three times a day in a lousy food in a noisy mess hall. It became normal for me to go with my father and brother to bathe in a mass shower. And it became normal for me to go to school in a black tar paper barrack and begin the school day with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I could see the barbed wire fence and the sentry towers right outside my schoolhouse window as I recited the words, "With liberty and justice for all." An innocent kid, totally oblivious of the stinging irony in those words.
When, how much later did that horrific irony settle on you?
Well,
I mean, how old were you when it finally dawned on you that your nation had treated you as an enemy of the state, essentially?
Well, as a teenager, I became very curious about what I was beginning to learn about my childhood, and so I became a voracious reader. I read all the history books that I could get my hands on. Couldn't find anything about my childhood imprisonment. I read civics books, and I read about the high ideals of American democracy. All men are created equal, endowed with an inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I couldn't relate that to what I knew to be my childhood imprisonment. The only person I could go to was my father.
Yeah.
And I had many long, sometimes heated after-dinner conversations with my father about our internment.
Heated? Why?
I knew about the ideals, you know, what democracy is supposed to be. And I said, "Daddy, I would have organized my friends at school and gone downtown to the federal building and demonstrated." And he said, "Well, I suspect you would have done that. But I had to think about your mother, you, your brother, and sister. They were pointing guns at me. Mm-hmm. If something happened to me, what do you think would happen to you guys?" And I understood, but I kept saying, "But Daddy, it was wrong. It's against the Constitution. It was, you should have protested it." I mean, there is no one more arrogant than an idealistic teenager. I gave my father a hard time. And some of the things I said, I regret to this day.
Yeah.
And back then, I didn't apologize for it. And one of the great regrets I have is that I never apologized to the man that I love so much, who bore the awful burden of the pain and the anxiety and the loss and the humiliation and the rage of all that happened, wave after wave of goading insults and deprivation. And this arrogant teenager gave him a hard time.
Your father, he didn't even live long enough to hear his nation apologize to him, right?
That's
because
right.
President Ronald Reagan in 1988, almost 50 years later, finally, on behalf of the United States, apologized to the citizens who had been interned.
That's correct. He died in 1979. Never to know that there would be an apology.
So I've read that you have said that this musical Allegiance, in part, is your apology to your father?
The last scene in Allegiance, where a very aged Sam Kimura, the character I play, apologizes again, after his father is gone, to his memory of his father. And so every night when I perform that scene, I am apologizing to my father for all that arrogant teenager put him through. But I am not in the Boston production.
Yeah, I was just going to say. I don't want to mislead folks.
Yes.
Because
that's why I'm so excited to be here, because for the first time, I will be able to see Allegiance. I've been in it since 2012, and I've never seen Allegiance.
The roles that you play are being played by,
a guy named Gary Ng.
Yeah. And the young Sammy Kumura is being played by Sam Tanabe.
Yes.
So it's
and
a great cast.
He was with us in the Broadway production.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could talk for hours, and unfortunately I do not have hours, there's so many tragedies about the internment of Japanese Americans. I mean, there's the loyalty oath that citizens were asked to sign, and your family was moved to another internment camp in California on the California-Oregon border. But I'm dying to ask you the following question, so forgive me if I follow all over myself, because yes, I am sitting across from Mr. Sulu. I will admit, I am a fan. But in 1966, when you were one of the starring roles in Star Trek, the 1966 version of Star Trek, one of its great draws and breakthroughs was that it was Gene Roddenberry's vision of equality and diversity put on television.
In the future.
In the
23rd
future.
23rd century.
But, I mean, just 22 years before that, you had been interned by the U.S. government. I mean, did people on the set know that? Did anyone at Star Trek know?
Okay. They knew.
Okay.
In between scenes, we chit-chat, you know. You run out of things to talk about, and people talk about their childhood. And I shared some of my childhood memories with them, and they were initially aghast. They had never heard of American citizens of Japanese ancestry being incarcerated. So we chatted about that just casually, set aside conversation.
I mean, how did Leonard Nimoy react to that?
Oh, Leonard was incensed, yeah. and he was really outraged that our democracy did something like that. As were many of the others, Walter Koenig, a Jewish American whose parents fled Russia because of the pogroms, and Nichelle Nichols, of course, you know, being an African American,
right,
understood the kind of racism that would happen after an event like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
We were seen as an enemy. At 5 years old, I was classified as enemy alien. I was neither. I was, you know, a kid. How could I be an enemy? And I was born and raised in Los Angeles. My mother was born and raised in Sacramento, California. My father was born in Japan, but brought to San Francisco as a boy. And he was reared and educated in San Francisco, and he called himself a San Franciscan all his life. I said, Daddy, you spent more of your life in Los Angeles. Why do you call yourself a San Franciscan? He said, once a San Franciscan, always a San Franciscan. We were Americans.
Yeah.
And yet, because of our faces, we were considered enemy aliens.
I mean, so I wanted to ask you about the irony of then being on Star Trek in this sort of play-acted utopia of diversity. And also, maybe layered upon that irony, it was 1966, so America still, to this day, it's still grappling with issues of civil rights. And we're still, what, 22 years away from President Reagan officially apologizing? I mean, did it ever seem, you were a working actor then, a young working actor, but did it ever seem strange to you that the place that you were able to, one of the places you were able to find complete acceptance, was on a starship in the fictional future?
Well, you know, in junior high school, well, my father told us about, you know, our democracy being a participatory democracy, and he urged us to be active in our society. And he offered to buy these cardboard campaign boards, you know, when I was in school. And he said, why don't you support your friend Bobby Thompson for athletic commissioner? And I did. And then the next semester he would say, why don't you get Bobby to support you for health commissioner, and I was eventually voted student body president. So, you know, from the time that I was a teenager, my father was kind of pulling the strings, but I thought it was me that was doing it, you know, and I loved being popular, and I was elected student body president. I thought it was a great thing. And at the end of that semester, the outstanding senior would be given an award called the American Legion Award. And when I told my father that I was a candidate for the American Legion Award, he told me something about the American Legion. Right after Pearl Harbor, the American Legion was one of the fiercest, vociferous advocate for Lock Up the Japs movement. And he was so moved by the fact that I would be nominated to be a candidate for the American Legion Award, the highest award a senior can get. And I wound up receiving that honor. And so I guess for my father, it was a lot of mixed feelings, pride and some kind of remembered pain and the irony of American democracy. And so just, you know, less than a decade after imprisonment, things like that were happening. Things were changing. But it was because my father urged all of us, my brother and my sister, to be actively involved.
Yeah. We've just got 30 seconds to go, George Takei. When people come to see the Speakeasy Stage Company's production, I mean, why do you think it's important for people to see Allegiance now?
People may know about the internment intellectually, but as a drama, that humanizes the story. And with music, which has a power of hitting people deep within their heart, is a powerful way of getting people to identify with us as human beings. Mm. And we hear the sniffles and some sobs. And of course, at the end, when we come out for our curtain call, it's that spontaneous standing ovation. We are reaching people not just intellectually, but through the heart.
Well, George Takei, actor and activist, and yes, Mr. Sulu as well. The musical Allegiance is playing now at the Speakeasy Stage Company in Boston. We have more information about that at radioboston.org. George Takei, thank you so very much.
And as we say on Star Trek, live long and prosper.
This is Radio Boston.